Welcome back to Dating Games, the Modern Relationships podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Temps, and our guest this week is an award-winning actor, improviser, and author of the book The Ex-Boyfriend Yard Sale, which explores the experience of selling off gifts from exes to pay off credit card debt and learning the value of heartbreak in the process. This also helped inspire a brilliant podcast called The Cost of Love. So joining me to discuss if it's worth it and so much more, it's Hayley McGee.
Hello, thank you for having me.
It's great to catch up with you. As I told you off air, I've listened to your show and I think it's brilliant. And this whole concept is very interesting to me because it's quite analytical, but you come at it from a very emotions forward place.
Yes. So I wrote this one woman show called The Ex-Boyfriend Yard Sale, and then I turned it into a book. And I still wasn't done being obsessed with the idea of the cost of love and if we can ever really know what it is. And so I made a podcast about it as well. But I started on that journey because I found myself in credit card debt, promising that I would start to pay off my bill by having a yard sale. I promised that to Visa when we were on the phone. And then I looked around my apartment and realized the only things I could actually sell had all been given to me by my various exes. And I thought, okay, so the ex-boyfriend yard sale, I'm going to sell things from my exes. And as I went to price these items, I became pretty frustrated because I thought, well, hold on a second. Surely the fact that this necklace is from the first person that I ever had sex with should increase its price. But I told him that I loved him and I knew I was lying, so surely that should decrease the price. And I became kind of confounded by how can we take into account all the ways we invest in our romantic relationships or don't, and let that investment translate into a price for the physical things that we have when we break up with that person. So that's my obsession and my kind of focus over the last 4 years.
Yeah. And it is really interesting to me because it is so subjective. So the very things that would rise the value of an item to you may actually turn somebody off it. You know, if someone's considering buying it off you and you start giving them the backstory about a certain ex, they may be like, this seems like it could have some bad luck on it or some baggage associated.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I wonder if we're a little bit similar in sometimes we find ourselves being more interested in the concept of love in a general sense for other people than sometimes for ourselves.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm fascinated by psychology, by why people behave the way they behave, by patterns in relationships. I trained as an actor and I've also been in psychotherapy for the last 10 years. And so all that stuff is fascinating to me. But playing it out in my own life has been very challenging for me to get to a place where I can really accept the love from someone who's available and just able to love me. I've historically been attracted and been in relationships with people who in one way or another were unavailable.
Yeah, that's really tricky. And that's something that I've had a bit in my own experience of therapy where just because you know better in some ways doesn't mean you get to automatically break the patterns. And sometimes I find myself noticing patterns in other people's dating lives better than in my own because I'm from the outside looking in. I'm not in the middle of it with all my biases and, oh, they were toxic, but they were really pretty. All of this nonsense.
Yeah, yeah. It's so true. It's so easy to look at a friend doing something and think, that person doesn't like you. Stop thinking about them. Stop talking about them. And yet when you're the person fixated on someone and you're like, why isn't it working? We could be so happy together. It's so hard to be objective and to wrench yourself away from something that, you know, in theory, you know, is bad for you, but in practice you want it nonetheless.
And that idea of, if I just think about it a bit more, if I really dwell on this and maybe put some sad music on, somehow I'll get to the answer to solve something on my own that actually involves two people.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's such a good point. This feeling like if I could just figure it out, we would be fine, rather than saying, no, this is a 50-50 project, whether I like it or not.
And so I think you have a story to share.
Yes. this is my odd dating story that we can dig into. So in my mid-20s, I dated a really hilarious guy. In my book, I call him Typewriter. And I dated him on and off for a year. It was kind of like 3 months on and then 6 months off and then back on for a couple months. And we ended up breaking up shortly after he gave me a vintage typewriter that I'd really wanted. He went back to his hometown for Christmas. And by that point, I was kind of interested in someone else. He was absolutely interested in someone else, but we weren't saying that to each other. And we had a very kind of swift breakup over the phone around Christmas time. Several months went by, springtime rolled around, and I had just met someone new. And in my book, I call him Backpack. I just met this backpack guy. And we had, you know, seen each other around at a few events, and then we hooked up, and then we were just like, oh my God, I'm crazy about you. And so we decided, you know, okay, let's go on a date. And we went to a date in the basement of a restaurant in Toronto to see some experimental theater piece. And this woman sitting behind me in the theater tapped me on the shoulder and said, are you Hayley McGee? And I was so excited because I thought, oh my gosh, not only am I being recognized for my work as an actress, my new love is truly understanding, you know, sort of the depths of my fame, which was nothing. I was a gigging theater actor in the Canadian theater industry in Toronto. Nobody knew who I was, but I was really excited nonetheless. And, you know, I was, yes, I am. And she said, okay, well, did you date Typewriter? And my stomach drops. And I was like, yes. And she was like, yeah, because I dated him like right after you did. And there may have even been some overlap. And actually, he just broke up with me. I think he broke up with me for someone else. And could we talk about it? And I was like, yeah, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. Absolutely. We can get together and talk about him. And out of the corner of my eye, I saw this new guy, this backpack guy, getting tenser and tenser and tenser. And suddenly I thought, no, what am I doing? He's hearing me make an arrangement to get together and talk about an ex. And I was like, you know what? Actually, on second thought, no, I don't think I should do that. I don't think I should do that. And then the lights went down. And then after the show, it came out that this woman who tapped me on the shoulder was actually the roommate of my new guy, of Backpack. And he just hadn't been home. He hadn't told her that we had like hooked up, that we were dating or anything like that. And so it ended up being even more fucked up and complicated. Now there's a little like coda at the end of this. I don't know if I'm using that music word right. In the subsequent months, in the next like 6 months to a year, I found out that the first ex had been pursuing and wooing other women the entire time we'd been together. And he actually had a pattern for doing it. Typewriter had a pattern, and he'd been pursuing and wooing other women the entire time we'd been together. And he had this way of doing it where first he would send you a transcript from his journal about you, and putting you in air quotes. Then he would send you a song, Make You Feel My Love, Bob Dylan version. And then he'd take you to a very specific restaurant in Toronto. He had this kind of certain poems he would send, certain things he would do. And it was all a kind of method to reel people in. And then he would start to get cold and withdraw and really gaslight you. And then he would break up with you and have moved on to someone else. So that was at first like kind of horrifying. I felt quite embarrassed. But then the more I found out, the more kind of people I was meeting who'd been put through this pattern, I realized, well, this is actually really great company to be in. He has terrific taste. And moreover, it's like the more times the pattern was repeated, I know of 12 people who've been through it, it becomes so clear that it has nothing to do with your worth as a romantic partner, and so much to do with Typewriter's pathology at the time. So that was kind of a strange comfort.
Yes, no, I can definitely see that. And it's nice in a way, as strange as the situation must have been to hear about, to have that reassurance of, okay, this is how he is with anyone. And
yeah,
talking about patterns earlier, it's a very good example of how ridiculous they can sometimes be, and yet they continue. Like the amount of effort he was clearly putting in to perfect this method of reeling women in, and at no point in that thinking, maybe this isn't working out. Maybe it's not the method of getting into the relationship that's the problem. It's the fact that once I'm there, then I have cold feet, or I want to move on to someone else. Like, the issue is surely in that part. And yet, you know, we could sort of focus on completely the wrong things.
Yeah, but I think, you know, to take my responsibility in it too, I so enjoyed having someone be so over the top and effusive with me. You know, he'd slam his hand down on a table in a diner and say, marry me. And I would laugh and be like, no. And he'd be like, all right, first time she said no, that's one. Like, it was so funny. It was so intoxicating to have someone just kind of instantly worship me. It was so different than anything else I'd ever experienced in my dating life. And when I would talk to people about it, I remember running into someone, a writer that I knew, on the streetcar and saying, you know, Sean, I met this guy and this is what it's like. And he says he's in love with me. And this writer was probably 15, 20 years my senior. And he was like, well, that's just laughable, Haley. You can't know that you love someone so early on. These things can't be taken seriously. And I remember feeling so annoyed with him because I'd been enjoying it so much and I so badly wanted it to be true. And so I think there was some willful blinders on, some determination on my part not to look at the red flags that were piling up quite quickly, along with people saying things like, you know, he does this, right? Like, you know, he's dates everybody, right? And I'd be like, yeah, but he says it's different with me.
Oh yeah, they always do, don't they?
Yeah.
And then you start to wonder if you have to say that, if that line's just locked and loaded, maybe there's a reason.
Exactly. But at the time, I wanted to believe that I was so special that I could reform a philanderer, you know, that I would be so, my love and my companionship was so powerful that he would change for me. It kind of seemed like the ultimate external validation of my value and esteem.
Yeah, and maybe there's a good in that, in a sense, in that you knew you deserved to be treated better than you had been in other relationships. And then this person comes along and they seem just so different to what you're used to. You're like, this must be it. I must have found it. And you really want it to be true because dating can be so exhausting. And you're like, sometimes different is just what you want.
Yeah. And also, like, what if it really is like it is in literature and movies? What if it really is a comet that hits you? You know, I think that was part of it too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think we are encouraged to want that. We want somebody to sort of orbit around us to an extent, to really make us such a central part of our life in theory. But I think whenever I've gone near anything like that in practice, it's either been they're like that for, you know, bad reasons. They're like too obsessive, or they're trying to manipulate you or whatever else, or it's just overwhelming. Even if it is genuine, you don't actually want somebody to base their life around you.
No, it's, you want someone who has their own, you know, in that film Before Midnight, the third one in the Linklater trilogy, the Before Sunrise, Before Sunset, Before Midnight. I might be doing those titles wrong. There's a moment in it where this old man, and he says, you know, I said to my wife, you take your care of yourself, I'll take care of myself, and we'll leave lots of room for us to meet in the middle. And I think, you know, a healthy relationship is one where you really know that you have your own back and your partner has their own back. And basically, you're not codependent. You know, you have lives that are intertwined in a way, but you're not propping each other up.
And that I think actually, when you get into anything particularly long term, it's so often the more practical elements of the relationship, the parts that might be overlooked or considered boring, that can make the bigger differences. And then the sort of like soaring obsessive love that to some extent doesn't last, you know, as part of the sort of the hormone rush of new love. That's not actually what defines a good relationship any more than walking past somebody on the street and being like, oh, they're super attractive, and having that butterflies feeling means that you're meant to like run after that person and they have to be with you. You know, it's just two versions of the same feeling in a way.
What do you think does make for a good relationship?
As you know, we do the rules of the game, and I often tell my guests, don't say communication, because so many of them want to say communication as their rule of the game. I do think that is a lot of it. I think maybe I'd go further than that. Like, a certain level of openness is really important. So communication, I think a lot of times people can interpret as like, make sure you're talking plenty, make sure you're texting regularly or you're seeing each other enough. And that's not necessarily it. You know, it's also what you're talking about. You could have shared interests in common, but you can't just talk about your favorite films. You also need to talk about what you're looking for in a relationship, what sort of insecurities you might have, what things have happened in your past that might have play into how you're reacting to this new person. So I do think a lot of that, and also, like I said, the practical things, like, do your work lives kind of complement each other? Do you live near enough to each other that it makes sense? Like, we don't want to think that these things make as much of a difference. We want to believe in the idea of, like, you know, they can live the other side of the country and we'll find a way to make it work. Maybe, but it is less likely.
Mm.
There's a reason why seemingly all the apps have some element of location in them.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. As a person who's done a lot of long distance, it's really challenging. I think it really suited me for a while. It was a way of, you know, it was a way of having someone in my life without having to really have someone in my life. And so it was a way of kind of protecting myself from, you know, the risks that it inherent to a more full-on relationship. But it made me feel like, but I still have somebody. They're there. I don't see them very often. So I don't have to, quote unquote, feel lonely, but I also don't have to really risk anything. I don't have to merge my life with anyone. I don't really have to take another person into account with my day-to-day plans.
Mm-hmm. And I want to ask you about those risks, or I guess we could call them costs, in a moment. But I wanted to quickly first circle back to something you said about backpack guy. In your anecdote where you were saying that it turned out it was his housemate that had tapped you on the shoulder and he didn't react to that or acknowledge that. You've sort of reminded me of that, of like smaller things that make a big difference. That would really kind of freak me out on a date, in a way that whether or not they kissed me at the end might actually make less difference to how safe I feel to explore this.
Yeah, I know. It was wild. It was so wild. I think it all just happened so fast, and maybe she didn't even see him there. She was just so focused on me. It was a very crowded, kind of dark little space. And yeah, and then afterwards he's like, oh yeah, that's my housemate.
So, also, what are the chances that they'd both gone to the same place on the same night? Spooky.
They'd both gone to the same place on the same night, and we had both dated.
And how did she know what you looked like? Had she seen pictures, maybe?
She must have. You know, you got to look up the exes of people you date.
You know what? I don't think I have done.
Oh my gosh.
I will admit I'm very good at finding people online. So it is quite normal for me to just do a quick search on somebody just to get an idea. And I've got a friend of mine, and between us, there's nothing we can't find. And so sometimes we'll just be like chatting about a friend's new partner, and then before we even realise we're doing it, we've both got up their social media pages and we're just dissecting and, you know, catching ourselves and be like, what are we doing? But also, have you seen this picture?
Yeah. And sometimes, like, some of my exes, it's just, I want to look them up and then I want to look up the person they're dating. And now it's got to a point where, you know, my exes have other exes. And so there'll be like people that my exes were dating, and then they break up and then they date someone else. And I very recently was in a social media rabbit hole and ended up looking up, an ex of one of my exes, and then their new, like, who's my ex's ex dating now? Let me just take a look at this person. Oh, that's interesting. they become these kind of like shadow figures in your life where you know about them, you kind of have this strange connection to them through a person. And yeah, I think that fascination, even if they're no longer dating your ex, that connection is still there. And I remain kind of vaguely curious about them. I'd say like once a year, they'll cross my mind and someone like that will cross my mind. And I'll just be think, I just need to do a little, I'm just going to do a little sweep here on the internet and see what's up.
It's just one of these things that I think, does it really serve us? Like, it's just curiosity, isn't it? It's that little dopamine hit of successfully finding information. And that's kind of the same reason why I stay off Facebook, because then you're bombarded with this information about somebody you went to school with and haven't talked to about since. Yeah. But now I know the names of their kids. And somehow both emotive and kind of irrelevant to your day-to-day life. And so I wonder sometimes if we fill our brain too much with that, what will be pushed out?
Yeah. It's true. And we're in an era now where it's possible. It's never really been possible before to satisfy those curiosities so readily and so instantaneously and so kind of shamelessly. You know, you don't have to go searching for gossip. You don't have to ask anybody, you know. You can indulge a lot of those impulses so much more easily now. And yeah.
You know what? I think that's a good way of looking at it, because it isn't. Yeah, it's no different. It's just a new version of like gossiping, and when, you know, people historically were less in, you know, big built up cities, and you would know more people locally and you'd be able to be in the loop of who your ex was dating, whether you wanted to know or not.
Yeah.
So I guess it's the modern version of that. And so we're kind of getting onto potentially one of the costs of love there. So doing your work and the podcast about it, what other things were you commonly coming across as like things that might counterweigh how wonderful relationships can be, whether that's in the finding of them or the keeping of them?
Well, one thing that I write about a lot in my book is the idea of integrity and having integrity within a romantic relationship. And I think that it can be so tricky sometimes to be truly honest with a partner as time goes on, because we evolve and change as time goes on. And there's such a value placed on being coupled in our culture that holding on to someone sometimes becomes more important than your own happiness. And actually, is this a good relationship? Are we really the best fit for each other now? Are we still both growing as individuals inside of this?
I think that's so well said. Absolutely. You get some points there. Because I think you're right. It's so often the case where holding on to somebody becomes more important than whether we should be holding on to them at all.
And I think sometimes the fear of, oh my gosh, I'm going to say something that I've been thinking for a long time, something that I want to do or something that I want to change, or, and I'm so afraid that it's going to put my partner off that I'm just not going to say it. And so it kind of grows as these unsaid things pile up. So I really think my feeling is, to have integrity, you have to risk saying those things that you want. And if your partner stays, that's great, because you've said your piece and they agree to stay and there's going to be some shift. But if they say, no, I can't do that, then I think that, you know, then I think it's the right thing to do is leave, so that you're never living a lie, so that you're never in a compromise that is so uncomfortable and sort of costly to your soul. And
also you're then stagnating, because if you're not expressing like a new dream that you have or an ambition to like move to a different place or something that you may well want them to be very much involved with, then you're preventing your own growth and they might be doing the same.
Yeah, I think so. So that's what I think a lot about. It's like being able to risk it ending is a hugely important part to having a relationship that is healthy and alive and fun. Not being so scared of it going away that you can't continue to evolve and grow.
Yeah, and I think there can be a major difference between where the root of that fear is. So I fear losing this person because they're wonderful and I love them in my life, versus I fear being alone and being unloved. And I think if that's the primary one, that's stuff you need to work on, whereas the other one is actually about that person.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm all for working on relationships. I really believe in it. I really believe in couples therapy. I really believe in all those kind of couples therapy techniques like reflective listening and all that stuff. I think it's, yeah, I don't want to just say what you want. If you're not getting it, get out. It's more nuanced and complex than that. But I think sometimes people do reach a point where it's like we have given each other a lot. We have both gained from this and it kind of feels complete. It kind of feels like we don't have much else to give each other at this time. And maybe the reason that we came together in the first place has been resolved. And can we just go, that was a success. We did everything that we could for and with each other. And now we're going to move on.
Yeah. And I think this is why I was so intrigued of this idea of the cost of love from you, because what can maybe to some people seem like a very analytical way of looking at something that ultimately can any of us really quantify what love is. And, you know, the description of love in one relationship may be very different to another, but at the same time, we kind of need to quantify it to a point. We need to decide how far it's worth going for. And I think that is particularly the case when it comes to ending the relationship. And I was reminded of that recently with talking to a friend about his most recent relationship that was somewhat long term, but it was the way he described it. I'd heard, you know, similar relationships so many times, and I knew that, you know, he got out at the right time. You know, he got out when the issues started recurring and there wasn't any progress being made when they tried discussing them. And I've seen so many people stay in the dynamic he was describing for so much longer. And then that hurts them and that creates more baggage in the long term that they bring into the next relationship. And so even though it might have seemed harsher to his partner, getting out sooner sounded very in the interest of everyone.
Yeah.
And so sometimes you need to be looking at this stuff of, okay, what is this costing me? You know, if I am feeling upset much of the time about this, if being around this person no longer is bringing me joy and it's bringing me more negative emotions, then analytical or not, the cost seems too great.
Yeah, I think that is a really big one that often gets overlooked. And my therapist, who I interview on my podcast, talks about this a lot. She was like, I just wish people would go into dating, but every interaction, how do I feel when I'm with this person? It's so easy to be razzle-dazzled by good looks, talent, intelligence, even a sense of humor. How do I feel in this person's company? How do I feel when it takes them 10 minutes to text me back? How do I feel if it takes them 2 days to text me back? Like, does my nervous system like that or does it make me anxious? And we're looking for someone that we feel at ease with ultimately. But that is prioritized in such a pitiful way often. We're looking for someone who ticks our boxes rather than just kind of listening to our body and thinking about, what's it like to be in this person's company? How do I feel after my interactions with this person? Do I feel good? Do I kind of feel like strange and slightly diminished? Do I feel a bit uneasy?
Yeah. And I think it can be very easy to get wrapped up in that, particularly if you've had a lot of relationships where there was an anxiety around them. There was an unpredictability. That person maybe always kept you on edge. And there can be something sort
of... That was kind of fun.
Yeah. There's something that can be kind of intoxicating, particularly if you found yourself in a few relationships like that. There can be a fascination in, how do I turn this around? How do I find comfort in this actually quite stressful relationship to such an extent that we can convince ourselves that that's good for us, that we're really working towards something. And I think your therapist makes a great point of, ultimately, we can overcomplicate it. Does this person make me feel comfortable? And I tend to sort of think about that in terms of friendships. Like, if I'm dating somebody new and they're really stressing me out, and I'd much rather just be like having a meal with a friend instead. Not a good sign.
No, I know. It's really not a good sign. And it's just, it's so crazy though. Like when you're lonely and when you're in that period of time where you've been in love and now you're not in love and you're like, I don't even have a crush on anybody. Please, I need something. I need something to pin this on, some object for my affection. I think it's easy to feel like, all right, they tick a lot of boxes and I kind of feel weird with them when I'm with them, but you know what? I'm going to give it a try. I think it's easy to feel like tired and kind of, in the kindest way possible, a little desperate. I've definitely felt like that, you know?
Yeah, I'm quietly grinning to myself because this is a contrast maybe between us. That friend I mentioned earlier, we also, in that conversation, he mentioned something about how he doesn't, if he's not looking for a relationship, then people don't really come up on his radar. And I was like, what is that like? So when you said about not even having a crush, I'm like, no, I always have crushes. That's part of the problem. Like sometimes I'd like to not have an option, have a bit of breathing space and then come back to it. But what commonly happens is I have a few options. Are they necessarily good ones? That's the constant conundrum.
Right, right, right. So crushes are not your problem.
No, it's making the right choices from there. Mm. And then part of it is as well, I don't think I've had as much experience in long-term relationships that is good. So I'm good at the dating bit, but because the two main long-term relationships I've had, or two and a half maybe, have all been quite toxic for very different reasons, then it's when I get to that stage, that's when I'm like, oh, now I'm starting to get my guard up of what's going to happen here. And I'm trying not to sort of fall into patterns of behavior or interaction with you that wasn't good in previous relationships. The earlier stages, better. Dating in particular, I love. Like if somebody, I was saying to someone the other day, if somebody could do the app stuff for me that at times can be quite exhausting and I don't always have the emotional space for, if someone did that for me and just set me up on a few dates a week, I would happily go and meet that many people.
There is a type of person. I do improv with someone who was saying this the other day. He was like, oh, I loved going on dates. Like I had like years of just first dates or like two dates. And it was just so fun. It's like something that you can get really good at. You know, you get good at the gift of the gab, drawing people out, connecting. Like there's kind of an excitement around it. And I think I can really understand that. It's just not my experience at all. I write about 8 different ex-boyfriends in my book, The Ex-Boyfriend Yard Sale. And all of them were people I met basically through work or through a friend of a friend. And so I have not really, I'm 36 and I've not really dated. I didn't even go on a dating app until basically the beginning of the pandemic. And in February 2020, I was like, Hinge, let's do this. Yeah, I went on 2 in-person dates. No, I went on a few virtual dates at the beginning of the pandemic. And that's where I met my partner that I've now been with for about 18 months. And sometimes I think I might have got really into it too. And the game of it and the like, oh, what am I going to wear? And where are we going to go? And the kind of the playful getting to know people and getting good at getting to know people.
Yeah. And actually, you know what? You describing it in that way does give me a bit of compassion for typewriter guy, which I didn't think I would be saying, because there is something about, getting into a flow with it. Not saying create a formula like he did, but I can see how there might be something in it for him for sort of feeling like he's good at that part, even if he's contrived about it and an extreme version of that.
Yeah, I think he just had like a few extra steps that he was like really obsessed with being good at. Like, let me get her really into me. And then once I feel that I've really got her, then I can withdraw. Then my job is done. I think it was maybe, this is like armchair psychology, but I think there's something called the conquest complex, where it's really about, it's like conquering people. And then once you've conquered them, you're no longer interested in them.
Yes, I hadn't heard.
I'm not suggesting that you have that. I'm saying that I think he had that because he would take it more than first dates. It would be like 6-month things or that kind of thing.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I don't retain interest with somebody unless I'm really interested, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I'm like, but I definitely have come across people who are like that, where it almost becomes they get so into the like sort of showboating thing about it that then it becomes the priority is get that person interested in me, and then I'll decide if I'm interested in them, which is
absolutely.
Is kind of quite a scary way to go about it for the other person, because they're so busy being wooed and they don't realize that it is later on when they've let their guard down that then they'll be judged for whether they're a good partner.
Absolutely.
It's quite scary to think about.
I know it's awful. But nobody teaches us how to do it. Nobody teaches us how to have kind of, you know, effective, clear, emotionally intelligent communication around our feelings. So then we end up in the dating world and we're all just scrambling and, you know, and we're ghosting each other and we're saying things we don't mean to try to soften and not hurt people's feelings. But then it ultimately just kind of confuses things more. And there's there's such a big gap there in how we're taught to communicate these things and how we're taught to, we're not taught to respectfully break up with someone or if it's just a few dates, you know, just like call it off, like to respectfully say, you're great. I'm just not feeling it. Yeah. So a lot of weird shit happens.
Yes. I think that is very well said. More points there.
Yay.
And so we'll start wrapping up then with our rules of the game. So you have an opportunity now to pass on something that you've learned for the people that are probably relating to what you're saying about the fact that none of us really know what we're doing and we're figuring it out as we go along. So do you have a rule of the game in mind, or would you like me to go first?
I have two rules in mind. Can I do two? Okay, number one is, if everybody warns you about someone you're dating, listen to them.
Yep.
Good?
Yes, agree. I already have thoughts in my mind about me not doing that, so I will take the rule. Yep.
And I forgot my other rule, so maybe you should say yours.
Okay.
I forgot what it was. I had two and now it's gone. It might come back.
Well, this is one I was reminded of earlier, actually, when we were talking about communication and what that actually means. And something I've been thinking about recently is talking about insecurities, because particularly certain people that I've dated, and certainly this is a common experience if your partner has anxiety, for example, there may be loads of things that that person is insecure about, which actually, from your perspective, are neither here nor there. You may have never noticed, you may have never held against them. And so actually getting that stuff off your chest and your partner having no reaction to it, as I often might do, can be so much more helpful and such a fast track rather than worrying about that until the worry wears off.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think being able to bring stuff forward and be heard in a way that is non-judgmental is so important and so hard in our intimate relationships, because we see our partners as a reflection of us. And so it's so easy to take things very, very personally. And so, yeah, my boyfriend and I, Robert and I, we've learned therapy, how to be like, okay, look, this is my shit, but I'm feeling a little hurt that you haven't texted me all day. I'm just feeling a little disposable. And then because we've prefaced it in a way that like, look, this is my shit, but I'm feeling this way, it helps the other person not take it personally. And it also helps you not just be like, what is wrong with you? Why haven't you texted me? And go on the attack, which immediately gets someone else's defenses up. And so, it's a different way of coming with a vulnerability of saying like, look, I know you're really busy, but for some reason it really hurt that I didn't hear from you today. And then so much easier than to be like, oh, babe, you know, I was thinking of you so much and I felt I couldn't pull out my phone. And it just creates a much nicer tone between the two of you than the accusation and the defense, which I go to immediately, because I'm someone who goes to fight rather than flight.
Yes. Yes, yeah. Relatable content.
I wish I wasn't, but c'est la vie.
All right. Well, we'll
say love for everyone I've dated.
So we'll wrap up there then with hearing where people can find your work and things about you online. And then in a moment, we'll do our little bit for the subscribers as well and talk about something that came up in your most recent podcast episode, actually, which was around can it be love if it's unhealthy? And I'm quite interested in the conversation around that. So for now, where can people find you online?
I'm on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook at Yes Haley McGee. It's H-A-L-E-Y, no Y in the middle. And I have a website, which is haleymcgee.ca. And you can find out about my book and my podcast and my shows there.
Brilliant. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for listening.
You can support the show, get ad-free episodes and bonus content by joining our new subscription on Apple Podcasts.
This replaces our Patreon and it's slightly cheaper.
Our show is edited and produced by Pete Murta.
With music by the brilliant Tessa Violet.
Speak to you next Friday. Until then, good luck out there.